This is Joanna Schrader reporting for DomesticFuel.com, and this morning I am with Brian Jennings, who is with the American Coalition for Ethanol. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Joanna, I'm great. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Well, Brian, I am so excited. I'm going to be participating in your Biofuels Beltway fly-in in Washington, D.C. next week, and I just got back, ironically, from a trip to Tennessee and happened to notice some gas stations selling fuel with no ethanol. So I think your trip out to D.C. is well-timed. I think a lot more people need to learn about ethanol.
Well, so do we. You know, there are almost 100 new freshman members of Congress, and, you know, whether we make visits to their offices or to veteran lawmakers, the fact that we need to do a better job of educating people about ethanol through telling our story, but also showing our story, is really important. And so that's what this fly-in enables us to do. We have nearly 50. I hope we get there, but right now just shy of 50 participants from a few states around the country who will be joining us next week along with you to focus on the importance of the renewable fuel standard, focus on the importance of consumer choice and E15.
Brian, what's the diversity of the 50 people that will be there? Are they all ethanol producers, or are we going to have some farmers and just ethanol advocates, and what's the mix?
We've got pretty good diversity, Joanna. That's a good question. We've got several livestock producers that are coming this year. Yeah, they may be an ethanol investor, but they're coming out this year as a livestock producer, and we're going to sort of deploy those livestock producers to key meetings where they can meet with a member of Congress or a staff person to talk about the distiller's grain component of ethanol, the fact that we just use the starch to make ethanol, that we use the really valuable stuff actually to make food and feed. And so, you know, we're going to be taking advantage of having those livestock producers along with us. Yes, we have a lot of ethanol producers, but we've got some bankers along with us, some enzyme companies along with us as well. So pretty heavy with the ethanol producer side, but livestock producers and some other folks from other walks of life as well.
So these lawmakers and key leaders are really going to hear the story from a lot of different viewpoints, not just the story from the ethanol producers then.
That's exactly right. And I think what we'll do is we'll sort of hand select which members of Congress, you know, hear from livestock producers versus maybe an enzyme supplier versus maybe an ethanol producer. And part of what we're trying to do is show the breadth and depth of support out there in the countryside for ethanol. Ethanol isn't some sort of narrow special interest program that benefits only ethanol producers. That's what oil companies would certainly like members of Congress to think. We want to show them that Main Street businesses and bankers and livestock producers and consumers all benefit in a variety of ways from ethanol, and we feel like we've got some good ways to show and tell that story next week.
Brian, you know, I'm curious about what you think the mood in D.C. is. The big story out of there has been the sequestration and the budget cuts. And I don't think that people realize what would happen if the renewable fuel industry disappeared. Is that going to be part of your story in D.C. next week?
Well, I think it does need to be part of this story, Joanna. The benefits that the RFS delivers for America without costing taxpayers a single dime. And so we're going to capitalize on that mood in Washington, which is concern about debt, concern about the budget deficit. Obviously, you mentioned sequestration and how those cuts will begin to, you know, potentially affect the economy. I think for our members to be able to walk into a congressional office and clarify, make clear that subsidies for ethanol, if that's what they want to call them, tax credits for ethanol, ended in 2011. We are not subsidized by the government. Oil companies still are. We have this thing called the RFS that levels the playing field. Oh, by the way, we're cheaper than gas. Oh, and did we mention we're not subsidized? I don't think we can say that enough, by the way. But I think we've got a really potent, compelling story to tell. At a time when Congress is sort of in the mood, not sort of, in the move not to spend any money. And so I think we're in a pretty good position here coming into a Congress with the mood that they are in.
Brian, you know, along these same lines, we talk about consumer choice at the pump, and unfortunately I haven't lived or been to an area where I've had the ability to use E15. So in terms of budget cuts, you know, we're talking about the financial situation. What does E15 mean for a consumer? What does that choice at the pump mean for a consumer?
Well, at today's prices, and, you know, this changes each day, but at today's prices, E15 means that a consumer saves 12 to 15 cents compared to unleaded gasoline. And that's certainly going to be part of what we convey to these members of Congress. First, E15 is simply a choice. A retailer doesn't have to sell it if he or she doesn't want to. A consumer doesn't have to buy it if he or she doesn't want to. But for those of us who do want that option, it's a much more affordable option. And with gas prices, and lately they haven't risen as quickly, but they were quickly on the rise and dangerously getting close to $4 a gallon well before Memorial Day, the price benefit, the affordability of E15 is something that we're really going to impress upon lawmakers next week.
And Brian, I think I would be remiss to say, you know, we're focusing next week on Washington, D.C., and granted, that's not the only time you're out in D.C. and talking to lawmakers, but one of the real fortes of your organization, of ACE, is the grassroots efforts. So how, let's talk just a little bit quickly about how being in D.C. and being in the local communities really work together.
Sure. Well, you know, as someone who's a registered lobbyist, I enjoy spending time in Washington and talking to lawmakers, and it's something I'm passionate about. But I also can tell you from that experience and my experience as a former staffer for a United States Senator that there are just certain things a registered professional lobbyist that doesn't do as well as a real person. And a banker from rural America or a farmer or a livestock producer can walk into one of these congressional offices and immediately have credibility by sharing his or her own personal story about, you know, what ethanol has done to benefit their business or their family or their way of life. And, you know, that doesn't have to be something that only occurs during the ACE fly-in. It can be something that these folks can convey locally to their newspaper editors and journalists, to, you know, radio and television media, to mayors and city council and county commissioners, to state legislators. It's the human side of this industry that we don't show enough. We often throw facts out there, and we've got a lot of facts on our side, but what ACE tries to do and what we think makes us unique from other groups is that we focus as hard on the human side of the equation to show policymakers, people in positions of influence, that real people benefit in real ways from this industry. And we think that goes a long way to telling our story very well.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.